Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain.
I want to go right to our first guest, Congressman Sean Casten, Democrat from the 6th District in Illinois. Congressman, thanks for joining me. We'll hit a button there for you and get you.
Raise the bar once I leave.
Well, I don't know. You, Barbara Streisand's sister, it's kind of a toss right there.
Nice to talk to you.
So, you as well. Happy New Year to you. And Congressman, let me just ask you, you get back there, you get sworn in, and then you get right down to work, right? Our focus here is on that, you know, January 6th, but you actually have a lot of work to do before we even get there.
Yeah, I mean, this will be my first time doing this with a presidential election. So we will get sworn in. We will vote for the speaker. We will pass our rules package, which has some, I think, interesting and positive developments. And then we're going to have to certify the results of the election. And I think we are all anxious to see how many of my colleagues acknowledge that that basic math prevailed and that Joe Biden did indeed get more votes than Donald Trump.
Well, the current number, Congressman, actually is about 144. Republicans say that they are going to object. That number actually is expected to go up, according to some reporting. And what does that mean to you? I mean, the end result, this is not a partisan comment. The end result is that Joe Biden is to be the next president of the United States. What do you think these 140 plus members are trying to accomplish?
It is tragic that the party of Lincoln, the party of Reagan, the party of Eisenhower has gotten to a point now that is completely beholden to Trump. I mean, this is a party who decided in their convention that they didn't want to have a platform. So to speculate on what the Republican Party stands for at this point, other than fealty to Trump, is pure speculation. I think what they hope to accomplish by this is to show to that, that base, that very sort of populist angry base that Trump motivated. They want to prove their bona fides to that base. And whatever that is, it is the opposite of leadership. Fortunately, they are not in the majority. This will be purely a show vote for them to signal to that base. But this is an important job. And it's frankly embarrassing if one person votes against math, much less of 144 do.
Yeah, what I know is that in the past, this sort of perfunctory ministerial role has taken about 23 minutes. Sometimes it takes about an hour to go through the procedure of counting all the electoral votes. It is now expected to be, just by definition, you have four states that they're complaining about. You get 2 hours for each one, 8 hours. It's going to be an all-day affair. Probably not why you would hope to go off to Congress right now, but that's what we're in for. So, Congressman, I know, look, you have a bold agenda, a lot of environmental, bills that you want to do. Let me turn you into a prognosticator for just a minute. Any guess on what you think? Right now, the polls show it really close. Any sense of it and what's going to happen in Georgia?
Mm-hmm. Oh, if I learned anything from this last November, it's not to make predictions about polls and all that. I think we have a tremendous opportunity, regardless of what happens in the Senate, to, as President Biden says, build back better, right? We're in the middle of this deep public health crisis, a deep economic crisis, a crisis of our democracy. And regardless of what party you are in, I don't think any of us want to be in the depths of these trenches any longer. But we have an opportunity to build all of those things back in much better ways to, fulfill the vision of our founders, who never claimed we were perfect, but always claimed that we should aspire to a more perfect union. And I think I know that is going to be the agenda of the Biden White House. I know that's going to be our agenda in the House. And while it's certainly easier to imagine that, if we have a democratically controlled Senate, I would like to believe that my colleagues across the aisle support those values just as much as I do.
A lot of support for a $2,000 payment. It turned out to be $600. Even Lindsey Graham tweeted basically saying, it is not socialism to give people $2,000 who are suffering. Again, if the Republicans control the Senate when you come back, what is your sense of more relief for people who are truly, look at your own district and people are suffering in business and they need help. Will they get it?
Well, it is, I sure hope so. It has been surreal to spend my first term in Congress and pass the number one and number two biggest off-budget appropriation bills. The previous biggest was the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act after the 2008 financial crisis. The biggest bill ever was the CARES Act that we passed a year ago, and the second biggest was the omnibus that we just passed again. And there isn't an economist out there, including Chairman Powell, who will tell you that what we have done is sufficient. We're just in this deep pain, and we need to inject more resources into the economy, because we as the federal government are the only entity that has the ability to inject the amount of resources that we need. So we're gonna need to keep pushing and get more money into people's pockets and give them more protection, so that if you're in a business that can't reopen during this pandemic, at least make sure that you can still keep a roof over your head and keep your skills sharp and keep food on the table.
I know Democrats have taken notice for the last 4 years, there's been tax cuts, all sorts of things, and it's a fact that the national deficit has gone up trillions of dollars over that time. And for some reason, I'll ask you maybe what that reason is, in the last couple of weeks, now that there's an effort to give people more stimulus money at $2,000, Republicans seem to be saying, can't do it. This deficit's out of control. We got to get it under control. What is different now that makes deficit control an operative factor that really was not even talked about for the last 4 years?
Oh, I think you know the answer to that question.
Yeah, but you're the guest.
You know, look, it's the folks who suspended their own economic austerity measures when they passed a $1.5 trillion tax cut. Really don't have much credibility to be talking about the need to protect the economy. But I think it's important to not get caught up in the politics of this and deal with it separately. What is the cost to our economy if we do nothing? Think about all those folks who all of a sudden become homeless and what the cost they put on our social services. What happens if those businesses don't reopen? What happens if kids never get out from under their student debt? That is a long-term huge pain on the economy. And it makes no more sense to only look at the federal debt than it would be to look at my financial situation and ignore my wife's. We are all in this country part of a collective family. We are all in this together. And when the least among us are struggling, those of us who have resources have an obligation to step up and make sure we do that. And that shouldn't be a political question. But if we allow this to be sort of lazily framed as we can't help people because we have the opportunity to borrow money at extremely low interest rates, but we would prefer not to, that's not just fiscally irresponsible, it's evil.
Hmm. One of the good things passed, of course, is the moratorium on evictions continues. People are safe in their homes. But what is your sense of the people who own those buildings? I'm not talking about people, big management companies or whatever that own, hundreds of units. But, the homeowner that I know you have in the 6th District that has that just extra apartment in their building, and it helps them pay their mortgage, and they're not getting any rent payments, and that tenant is protected. What about the mortgages that are due? Are we also then facing foreclosures down the line?
Yeah, without question, and you ripple through. There's the individual renter who has a payment to the person who owns that property, and then of course the person who owns that property has to make a mortgage payment to the bank. And if we don't cover all that, eventually you get into systemic risk for the financial system. We have done some, and this is why the economists were all saying that what we have done is not sufficient. Extending the moratorium on evictions. Make sure that people keep a roof over your head. But you are exactly right that also has to be coupled with some recourse to the landlord who's got to cover their expenses. We've talked about that. We negotiated on the Financial Services Committee some plans to do that. We ultimately could not get consensus around the cost of that because that does require a significant injection of federal dollars. We got a little bit of it through the back end because the Federal Reserve used their authorities to inject liquidity into the financial system so that some of the banks had some cover there as well. But we're going to have to go back and revisit that because we're not, I think we've got another month for the eviction moratorium. Mm-hmm. We're not going to be through COVID in a month. I wish we were, but the reality is we're still going to have that economic pain, probably. If we do everything right on this vaccine rollout, it's going to be into late spring, early summer before we're we can start to think about getting back to normal.
So as you go back, we have just a couple minutes left. As you go back, I know that I talked to your colleague, Marie Newman, who's going back, and I asked her what bills she would present. And she said, well, as a freshman legislator, you kind of tie yourself to other people who are, you know, going on with their bills. Well, you are a returning legislator. So what's number one on your agenda when you go back? What will Congressman Kasten be presenting for consideration?
Well, we dropped a major carbon pricing bill, which we will reintroduce in this session. And, you know, I think we're at the point where we now have a president who's saying that he's going to take a whole of government approach to climate change. And we developed, I think, some pretty innovative approaches of doing a way that prices carbon in a way that actually lowers people's cost of energy and uses market forces in a way that hasn't been done. So we'll be reintroducing that. The second one that we're just working up that's going to take a little while to draft is the United States is one of the few major economies that doesn't maintain a balance sheet, which means that we don't differentiate as a country between money we spend to invest in assets and money we spend just on operating expenses. The UK does a great job of that, and it completely confuses the way that we think about fiscal matters. This conversation we've just been having, right?
Yeah.
Nobody who owns a house thinks about themselves as being horribly indebted because they recognize that the value of that house, you know, barring some, you know, mistiming of housing markets, generally exceeds the cost of their debt. And yet when we talk about in government, how are we going to fund the kind of infrastructure which will stimulate our economy, which will help us build back better, which will give us the kind of green infrastructure we need, we talk about, can we afford the borrowing? Instead of saying, well, these are hard assets that are going to deliver dividends for years down the road. So we're working on some legislation. Basically, the idea is to say, let's use the same kind of tools that households and businesses use to recognize that investments in accretive assets are good things to do, as long as the return exceeds your cost of borrowing. And so we're working on some legislation, which is, I think, is going to be take a lot of the 117th, but that's sort of our big push for this term.
We're going to keep it,
this idea of a national balance sheet.
We'll keep an eye on that, and please keep us informed both on WGN Radio and, of course, WGN TV, where I'll have you as a guest, I know. Congressman Sean Kasten of Illinois' 6th District. But I wanted to do sort of a look back, a look forward for a few minutes. And joining me to do that, one of my favorite people, he's the co-anchor, moderator, correspondent for Chicago Tonight, the moderator of the Weekend Review. You know who I'm talking about. I'm thrilled to be joined by Paris Schutz. Hey, Paris, thanks for being with me.
It's an honor to be on WGN Radio with you.
Yeah, it's kind of merging of the worlds here, right?
Absolutely. That's two great Chicago institutions.
Very much so. Let's take a moment and look backwards. If I were to ask you what the biggest stories of 2020 were, but I don't let you say COVID and I don't let you say the presidential election, all right? Because those are too easy. What do you look at and say, these are really, when we look back on 2020, man, this is what we're going to be talking about for years to come?
Well, so much is related to COVID and so much is related. I mean, so much stems from that.
True.
You know, it's like the tree where everything else, every other story was kind of a branch of that. But if we're going to exclude that, I might say two things. One, you know, the civil unrest that erupted in Chicago and across the country in the wake of the George Floyd killing.
Right.
In one sense, you know, it brought a lot of attention to the issues between the police and the Black community and the Hispanic Latino community. There were a lot of productive marches. There were a lot of productive policy discussions out of it. But then there was the other side of it. There was that weekend in early June where some of these marches and demonstrations turned into violent unrest and a lot of looting. We had that one weekend where there was something like 27 homicides. It was the most in since I think the 1960s in Chicago. I mean, it was just a tragic weekend, and the city still hasn't really recovered fully from that. I mean, the neighborhoods were hit, downtown in the Loop was hit, and after that, there was a lot of concern, you know, that the Mag Mile and folks around the traditional shopping districts of Chicago, you know, they might have trouble retaining real estate there, and then not to mention, you know, the damage that was done in neighborhoods. But slowly, you know, neighborhoods have rebuilt. The plywood has come down from windows. It just was one of those weekends where everything seemed to be on the precipice for Chicago, and it reminded a lot of observers of, you know, the riots in 1968 in the 60s after MLK, but then after RFK. You know, a lot of folks that have been around since then said the city many neighborhoods like North Lawndale, they never recovered after that, and they were afraid this was a similar event. But you know, the spirit of Chicago has been on display. The neighborhoods have rebuilt, and there's a lot of optimism that the city's going to rebuild from a lot of what happened.
And the results of those protests and then the rioting, as you talk about, which, of course, is a national impact. Your world is Chicago tonight, and we'll keep it at home, certainly in the state. And of course, we just recently, in the latter days of the year, we have the Anjanette Young situation of cops going into her apartment, and she's naked, and they, you know, and they're in the wrong place and all that. My question is, as we begin to look forward, does Mayor Lightfoot have a rough 2021 ahead of her, or do you think she's got a handle on things as she's tried to take ownership of some of the components of what you've been talking about in the Anjanette Young situation?
I got to be honest with you, Paul. 2020 was a rough year, you know, and that's not Mayor Lightfoot's fault.
No.
Something with COVID, you know, dealing with COVID. I thought she would have a rough 2020 even before COVID hit because, you know, city council was fairly divided, and she didn't have that. It didn't seem to have that mandate on city council that Mayor Emanuel had and Mayor Daley had for so many years. But she said, you know, I'm a different politician. I'm not going to be the kind of person that buys votes. Despite COVID, she was able to get her budget through. She was able to get some initiatives through, you know, kind of by the skin of her teeth, not with these big landslide victories that Emanuel and Daley always had. But now we enter 2021 after the Anjanette Young, where there are more aldermen speaking out against the Lightfoot administration's handling of this. But these are aldermen that have had a tenuous relationship with her at best, like some of the self-styled Democratic Socialist aldermen, the more progressive aldermen. She's going to have a tough 2021 politically, although it was a very tough 2020, and she was able to win votes for her initiatives in city council. So I wouldn't put anything past her. She's proven that she can overcome a lot of opposition and cobble together a majority. But certainly there are questions, because this was the impetus for her launching a campaign, was police reform, was calling out the Emanuel administration for lack of transparency around police reform issues. And now I think she recognizes that this really damages her brand, because this was what her brand was, and she's had to go in overdrive. People in the Corporation Counsel's office losing their job. Now the Inspector General is going to come in and probe, you know, her reaction and what she knew. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough 2021. And you might, by the end of the year, find, you know, a field of challengers starting to sort of test the waters.
And speaking of challengers, Mike Madigan, just as a brief comment, I mean, you know, we've got redistricting around the corner. Black Caucus supports him. Does he survive this challenge?
The other day he got the Latino caucus to come out in support of him, saying that he is the person to advance the Latino initiative. You know, and he cut that deal with Tui Garcia. They kind of have sort of an alignment here in the Illinois Democratic Party. He also got the Black caucus in the Illinois General Assembly on his side. He doesn't have the votes now to remain Speaker, Paul, but there is no one that has anywhere near as many votes as he does. So I've made this reference a million times. It's like the papal conclave. They're gonna take many rounds of votes until the white smoke starts coming out. But at this point, Madigan, you know, he wants this job again like a bulldog. He's not going anywhere. And despite not having the votes right now, he has the upper hand certainly to get elected Speaker one more time.
Yeah, I've always felt that because of redistricting, this was not the year for him to go. We have less than a minute left, but you know what? There's another side of Paris Schutz that everybody loves, and I'm surprising you with this, but I'm going to ask my folks to introduce somebody to a little side, the other side of Paris Schutz.
I took an express train to the station. Same old destination. Trying to make it all right. On a lonesome Christmas night.
Yeah, see, that's the Paris I love, playing at Davenport's in different places.
You're gonna
make it back? You're gonna get back on stage?
I'm concerned with. I'm a big fan of the music scene and the independent venues in Chicago. They really make this city what it is. And there's so many great artists out there that do this for a living that have been stuck and not able to work. And I know they want to create and they want to be out there playing for audiences. So yeah, I'll be back on stage at some point, you know, just playing music. I love to write music and play music.
I know you do. But, you wrote the Chicago Tonight thing. And by the way,
I'm a full-time journalist, and so I got a job, and I want to make sure that you know, as soon as these clubs reopen, you know, these bars and venues that are just, you know, they bring so much passion to what they do, these places. And there's so many great young artists in Chicago. I want to go out and see them, support them, get them out there, especially creating original music, you know.
Yeah,
you know, we need to have all of them back out.
We need
there
to do it, and you and I need to do a duet one night at Davenport's. I want to credit WTTW
Absolutely.
For that music. They let us use it. Well, we're crediting them for letting us use it. Parrot Chutz.
Blame them.
No. Credit to you. You're a great performer.
They own all my music now, by the way. They get all the copyright. Residuals.
Well, then I'll credit you too. Thank you for being with me. I wish we had more time. We'll do this again. Parrot Chutz of Chicago Tonight.
Right.
Happy New Year, my friend. Be well.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.